with 21 correspondents in 7 countries from around the world. This is Bondi Tunes International.
This is Bondi Tunes International, broadcasting from Australia and around the world. I'm Henry in Sydney, and I'm joined by our entertainment reporter Rachel Brunsdon and our Australian political editor Adam Devlin. Both are joining me from Melbourne. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Hi.
Now, Rach came up with a great idea, and what we're going to do is we've all picked 5 of our best, most favourite movies, and each of us are going to go through these movies, 5 being the 5th best and 1 being the best, and we're going to get straight into this, and just bear in mind, we don't know what each other have picked, so some of the movies may overlap. Let's start with Rachel. Number 5.
E.T.
E.T. Home phone.
E.T. phone home. E.T. phone home. E.T. phone home.
E.T.
E.T.
Wow.
Because I was like 12 when that came out, and the impact on me was huge because I was 12. And I thought it was a stunt, but it was also a stunning and cleverly made film, and it was a clearly very successful film. But it was when I first started to know who Steven Spielberg was, and I thought, wow, I'm looking forward to see many, many of his movies, and I did. So, yeah, E.T. was mine. Number 5.
You're not going to believe this, but I've never seen E.T. I think I'm the only person in the world who hasn't.
Robbie hadn't seen E.T. at all until about maybe a year ago. But he hadn't seen Xanadu either, which is horrific. So I reminisce that.
I was going to say, you're still living with this man and he hasn't seen Xanadu?
He has now. And he bought me the DVD, which was very nice.
Ah, lovely. Now, am I correct in remembering that E.T. was what introduced Drew Barrymore to the world?
Yes.
On a big scale. She modelled and she did a couple of little bits and pieces before that, but that was our big introduction to her.
Mm.
Okay, Adam, you're number 5.
My number 5 is an oldie. We're going back to 1966, the year I was born.
Mm-hmm.
And it was director Mike Nichols' first directorial debut. You only get one debut, don't you?
Yes.
We're talking about the classic Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf.
I wouldn't go on with this if I were you.
Oh, you wouldn't, would you? Will you not?
You've already sprung a leak about you know what.
What? Why?
About the sprout, the little bugger, our son. If you start in this other business, Martha, I warn you.
I stand warned.
Do we really have to go through all this?
So anyway, I married the SOB. I had it all planned out. First, he'd take over the history department. Then when Daddy retired, he'd take over the whole college, you know? That was the way it was supposed to be. Getting angry, baby, huh? That was the way it was supposed to be. All very simple. And Daddy thought it was a good idea, too, for a while. Until he started watching for a couple of years. Getting angrier? Until he watched for a couple of years and started thinking that maybe it wasn't such a good idea after all. That maybe Georgie boy didn't have the stuff. That maybe he didn't have it in him.
Stop it, Martha.
Like hell I will. You see, George didn't have much push. He wasn't particularly aggressive. In fact, he was sort of a flop. A great big fat.
Stop it, Mother.
I hope that was an empty bottle, George. You can't afford to waste good liquor. Not on your salary. Not on an associate professor's salary.
And Richard Burton, George Segal, and Sandy Dennis.
It was a dark movie.
Oh, shattering movie. You know, the story of George and Martha, played, by, of course, by Elizabeth Taylor and Richard Burton. He's a failed university professor. She's the daughter of the dean of the university who thought she was marrying somebody on the way up and only to realize that he was really, you know, plateaued. Just spend their nights in drunken stupor, slowly but surely destroying each other. Amazing, amazing film. Elizabeth Taylor, won the Academy Award, of course, as did Richard Burton and Sandy Dennis. The three of the main four leads won Academy Awards for their performances in this. Just a spectacular film. And it was the first time that Elizabeth Taylor had allowed herself to be screened or filmed where she wasn't glamorous. She put on weight for this. She had an ugly old wig on, bad makeup. Of course, it's a black and white film, so they you know, deliberately used makeup and lighting to make her look haggard and old. And it is one of the most devastating films I've ever seen.
Full on. Look, I don't want to spend too much time on each of these films. We've got to go through 15 films. Rach, what did you think, briefly, what did you think of Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf?
Can I say that I have never seen it? But it's shocking that I've never seen it, because in film school, when I was at film school in Sydney, we used to watch films like this. This is when I became familiar with Citizen Kane, The Maltese Falcon, and all that sort of stuff. But I've never seen it. I am horribly embarrassed to admit that I've never seen it.
I will forgive you.
Here's some homework, Rach. You have to see it in the next week.
My number five is The Castle.
Steve is an apprentice mechanic, but he spends most of his time reading The Trading Post. He just loves buying and trading.
Ergonomic chairs, four of them.
What do you want?
180.
He's dreaming.
Dad, 450.
For jousting sticks? Tell him he's dreaming.
How much is a jousting stick worth, Dad?
Oh, it couldn't be more than 250. Depend on the condition.
Dad, some guy's selling an overhead projector.
Nah. Now hang on, Steve. What's he asking?
150.
Tell him he's dreaming.
Yeah.
Dad, what's a pulpit?
Where the minister gives his sermon from. How much?
800.
Dreaming.
Of course, Rob Sitch is a fantastic writer, and he's written a few iconic, dare I use the word, iconic movies, Australian movies. Actually, Michael Caton lives here in Bondi. Now, this particular movie, The Castle, it brought out some pretty famous people, if you know what I mean. Aunt Tenney?
Yes.
Aunt Tenney was from
A Country Practice.
A Country Practice, that's right.
Yes. Her death in A Country Practice was one of the most watched episodes of Australian TV ever.
So I hear.
And, of course, it introduced Eric Banner to the world. Yes, and, of course, he went on to Hollywood stardom.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's my number five. And it's
brilliant, brilliant Australian movie.
It is. And it's interesting that it's changed our vernacular, you know? Like, we've just used a couple of phrases. There's so many in that film. Rach?
Yes.
what did you think of Castle?
Oh, it's brilliant. It's brilliant. It's beyond compare. In terms of Australian film, it's probably one of the best, if not the best, that I've ever seen.
Okay. Number four, H.
Oh, number four is Kenny.
Oh.
Now, I haven't seen that.
No, neither have I. I haven't seen Kenny either. What's Kenny?
The reason why Kenny is one of my favourite movies is because a guy called Shane Jacobson, who just about everybody knows his name now.
Yeah.
He was in Kenny. His brother, he wrote it with his brother. His brother directed. Shane won the AFI award that year for his performance in Kenny. And he's one of my oldest and dearest buddies.
Oh, so you know Shane?
I had great interest in Kenny from the get-go. Kenny was a character voice that he used to do back in 95 when I was living here in a warehouse full of crazy people. And he was one of the crazy people, and he used to do the Kenny voice all the time. And when I saw that he was doing a film, I just thought, that's intense and awesome and really cool. So, and I know that he's just probably one of the loveliest, nicest, kindest humans on planet Earth. And funny, so very funny.
Yeah, he's a lovely guy. Yeah, there's no doubt about
really,
it.
Really. But if you haven't watched it, your homework for the next week is to watch Kenny.
Okay.
And that I will do, because it is on my must-see list, and it is a film that I miss seeing it in the cinema, but it's always one of those ones that, you know, it's an iconic Australian film. It was incredibly successful. And so, yes, I will definitely see that this week.
Adam, hooray. Adam, number four.
Number four for me is a little bit different to my number five. It's Brokeback Mountain.
Oh.
Oh, that's a good one.
Directed by Ang Lee, came out in 2005. Based on the Annie. Now I can never pronounce her. Never know how her surname is pronounced. Is it Annie Prowl? Anyway, yeah, she wrote a collection of short stories called Brokeback Mountain and Other Stories, and it's the story of two cowboys in America who meet and fall in love. However, due to the times that they find themselves living in, they're not able to be open about their relationship.
I want to mention this before I forget his name, Randy Quaid.
Yes.
Was in that film, and he was really bitter about his pay because he didn't realize it was going to be a huge success.
Well, it was a small budget film. It had a budget of $14 million, and it ended up taking something like $180-odd million at the box office.
Nice work.
Of course, the two leads in it were Heath Ledger and Jake Gyllenhaal. Gyllenhaal, I don't know.
Whatever.
Jake's Jake filler.
playing the you know, crossed lovers. It is one of the most emotional movies I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, and it was bold.
I can't watch it without, you know, just dissolving into tears.
It was a very bold movie, wasn't it? I mean, I think it was 2005 you mentioned. It just seemed really edgy. The whole film was edgy, especially the way the way he drawled in his voice. I mean, it's just brilliantly done.
And there's a scene at the end where after the Jake character has died, I'm giving some spoilers out here, but I'm assuming everyone's seen it. where after the towards the end of the film, the Jake character dies. They'd had a fight previously. They had gone for a period of time without seeing each other. He'd left a blood-stained shirt with Heath Ledger's character had left a blood-stained shirt with Jake's character. And after Jake had died and Heath had found out about his death, he went to see the mother said, look, you can go up to his room if you want. Went up to the bedroom, notices in the wardrobe that the two blood-stained shirts are hanging together on the same hanger. I've got goosebumps even telling about it. It just brings me to tears every time I see it.
Rachel? Yes?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Yes? I really enjoyed Brokeback Mountain. I particularly liked the performance of Michelle Williams, who played
the wife.
Heath Ledger's wife. And she handled that with great courage and aplomb. She's an exceptional actress herself, and I mean everybody was nominated for that movie. Yeah. Everybody got an Academy Award. Gong didn't win, but were acknowledged, and it was really important to be acknowledged. But it was an important film. It was a real breakout film, and it was very impressive.
Okay.
In fact, Ang Lee did win the Academy Award for Best Director for it.
There you go.
Okay. Now, if you've just joined us, this is Bondi Tunes International. My name's Henry, and I'm in Sydney, and I'm joined by Rachel and Adam in Melbourne. And we're actually counting down our top five favourite films. And it's my turn. Number four, When Harry Met Sally from 1989.
Say anything to her.
Are you saying you can say things to her you can't say to me?
No, it's just different. It's a whole different perspective. I get the woman's point of view on things. She tells me about the men that she goes out with, and I can talk to her about the women that I see.
You tell her about other women?
Yeah. Like the other night. I made love to this woman, and it was so incredible. I took her to a place that wasn't human. She actually meowed.
You made a woman meow?
Yeah. That's the point. I can say these things to her. And the great thing is, I don't have to lie because I'm not always thinking about how to get her into bed. I can just be myself.
You made a woman meow?
This one, I knew it.
I'll have what she's having.
That's right. Here we go. You made a woman meow? That's another line in that film. Rob Reiner.
I am the dog.
Rob Reiner really is amazing, isn't he? I mean, he's come up with some fantastic films.
Mm-hmm. The thing I remember from that movie is that it seemed to have everything right at the right time. The cast was absolutely red hot at the time.
Yes, Billy Crystal, Meg Ryan. Yep.
The context of the film fitted in society at that moment. It just, it, it you know, lightning tends not to strike twice, and that's an example of it. It just was, everything was right. The right cast, the right production, the right director, the right time, and of course it was a massive hit.
And Meg Ryan, I've heard that she can be a bit of a bitch. she went on Parkinson on the BBC in the UK, and he, I don't know if it was him being the bitch or her being the bitch, but they clearly didn't get on because he'd ask her questions about a movie which she did, which was really, I think she's naked halfway through the movie, I think. I can't remember the name of it. But that made headlines when he would ask her questions, she'd just go yes or no, which is an interviewer's nightmare. But she clearly didn't like him.
Yeah, I've not heard that she's a bitch. I've not heard that. I mean, I know she's pretty reclusive these days. She only does bits and pieces of work, but I'd never read that she was a bitch. What I like about When Harry Met Sally was that it's my introduction to the Efrons and their films.
Yes.
And Nora Ephron was she's no longer with us. She wrote some fantastic things. So and the Efron sisters brought us Sleepless in Seattle, You've Got Mail, and then Hanging Up, which was about them, which was about the Efron sisters and their relationship with their dad. And
were not they also involved in Heartburn?
They were.
It was a great movie.
I don't know to what degree. I'm not sure to what degree. I think it was one of those because they did a lot of fringe projects.
Yes.
I mean, Delia Ephron was one of the people responsible for The Holiday, which is a British/American film with Jude Law and Cameron Diaz and Jack Black and her lovely name? Kate
Winslet.
Thank you. I was thinking Beckinsale. I don't know why, but yeah. So the Efrons, I love that movie because it introduced me to the Efron sisters.
Okay. Now, Rach, you're number three.
My number three is a silly one, but it's still really important. It's the first time I ever started to understand Jewish humour, and that was Blazing Saddles.
Men, you are about to embark on a great crusade to stamp out runaway decency in the West. Now you will only be risking your lives, whilst I will be risking an almost certain Academy Award nomination for Best Supporting Actor. Now raise your right hand for the pledge. Right. Now repeat after me. I. Your name?
Your name.
Schmucks. Pledge allegiance.
Pledge allegiance.
To Hedley Lamarr.
To Hedley Lamarr.
That's Hedley.
Hedley.
And to the evil.
And to the evil.
For which he stands.
For which he stands.
Now go to that voodoo that you do.
Couldn't be done now. Could not be done. It's racist. It's wildly racist. It's wildly everything. But it was great. And Gene Wilder and Mel Brooks in that particular movie were just hysterical. And, at doing what they did best. And I just found the whole thing absurd and wonderful, and Madeleine Kahn was just sublime. And
oh, wonderful,
but it was funny, it was silly, it was poking fun at, and they all didn't take themselves too seriously. They were just a bunch of people having a good time.
It was a very slapstick kind of movie, wasn't it?
It was. But, and it had its moments where when I watched it back when I was a kid, I thought, this is hilarious. But now I look at it and go, oh, you can't say that.
I have to say, I have a confession. I've not.
Oh, here we go.
Oh, Adam, you've got so much homework this week.
I know. It's one of those films. Oh, no. I love Mel Brooks. I love Madeleine Kahn. Why I haven't seen it, I cannot explain. It's one of those movies that whenever my friends and I get together and we start talking about, classic movies or favourite films or whatever, this always comes up and I'm always embarrassed to say, I've not yet seen it.
Oh, you'll love it.
And I know I will love it. I've just got to, pull my finger out and do
it. Okay, homework for you this week is Kenny and Blazing Saddles.
Okay, and Adam, pull your finger out with number three.
And it's another old one. I don't know what it says about me that all my favourite films are old, but
maybe you're reincarnated or something.
Yeah, maybe.
You're an old soul, Adam.
This is from 19... 1959, and it's an absolute stunning film. I love it to death. It is called Suddenly Last Summer.
Sebastian only needed you while you were still useful.
Useful?
I mean young, able to attract.
He's babbling again, babbling and lying.
He left her home because
you stole him.
Lost her attractiveness.
What does attractiveness have to do with the son and the mother?
You see, Doctor, we were both decoys.
Something horrible happened to that girl last summer. Some dreadful, traumatic experience of some kind. What?
It was a one-piece bathing suit made of something white. The water made it transparent. I told him I didn't want to swim in it, but he just grabbed me by the hand and dragged me into the water all the way, and I came out looking nude.
Mm-hmm. With Katharine Hepburn and Elizabeth Taylor and the amazing Montgomery Clift.
Mm.
Based on a Tennessee Williams play, a one-act play. Now, the screenplay was credited to Gore Vidal and Tennessee Williams. However, Tennessee Williams came out after the film came out and said, I hate this film and I had nothing to do with it. I didn't write one word of this script. So
it's pretty clear. Thanks very much, Tennessee Williams.
Yeah.
No mistaking that.
But an amazing story that is about repressed homosexuality and cannibalism. You know, two things that go hand in hand.
But you're always best to suddenly happen in the summer.
Yes, usually last summer.
I think I've seen
an amazing film, and I have to say for Katharine Hepburn, this is my favourite Katharine Hepburn performance of all time. She portrays a woman on the edge of insanity so brilliantly that it is not until the very last scene that she's in that you actually realise, oh my God, she is actually insane.
Right.
Okay.
Brilliant film.
You're a bit insane yourself, Adam Devlin. Attracted to the Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf and this? Okay. My number three, and forgive me if you think I'm being biased for Australian movies, I have to pick The Dish. I can't help myself. I love The Dish.
Yes.
Set in, obviously, 1969, when man walked on the moon.
I mean, no offence, but the Americans spend billions of dollars to let us watch man walk on the moon, and in the end it falls to you blokes. I mean, how do you feel about that?
A lot better before you open your trap.
In a few days' time, we'll be watching television pictures from the surface of the moon.
Yes, slap bang in the middle of it.
I must stress these are not to scale.
Imagine the Earth is basketball.
This'll be good.
And
I get it.
How do you reckon they go to the...
up there?
Yes, this is Al Burnett from NASA. Al's here to make sure that all the signals get back to mission control.
This was always your dish. You were always the boss. You'd never let anyone else come in and run the place.
I'm afraid we're going to have to get back to work.
You treat us like a pack of galahs.
That's a kind of parrot.
Have you thought about what's being attempted here?
Of course I have.
This is science's chance to be daring.
It will be one of the proudest moments in Australia's history.
I love the scene in it where they're picking up something in this on in the satellite and they can't figure out what it is, and eventually they realise that somebody's using the microwave.
I don't know if we're talking about the same thing. Another poignant thing in the movie and about the moon is that they were trying to work out where the moon was, and one of the characters just says, "Just look up, it's up there," and then they could track the moon again. I mean, really.
Yeah. And then, brilliant.
And the music was wonderful in this film as well. And the characters, you know, trying to explain to the American who'd come over to oversee this project, you know, terms like, "Aya gala?" And the other dude would have to explain what gala meant to the American man. It's just lovely stuff.
And that scene where they're playing cricket in the dish itself
is
brilliant.
That's the best. Yeah.
Yes. Yep. It's just so Australian.
Is that Working Dog? Is that
yes.
Rob Stitch?
It's Rob Stitch again, yeah.
Yeah.
Who did The Castle. The guy's just a genius for Australian films, that's for sure.
And TV.
I keep wishing, of course, but I keep wishing he would make another big movie again, because...
He will, I reckon.
It will happen, yes.
He's busy on TV. Okay. Right, now we're down to number two. Rachel?
Number two, I chose Gallipoli.
Ah, another Australian.
Lovely, lovely, beautifully, horrifyingly awful film about the Regiment of the Light Horse in the war.
Yes.
And the reason why I love it so is because my dad's in it.
Oh, really?
Oh.
Yeah, there's a scene in that what used to be the beautiful Adelaide Ballroom, which they above the railway station, which they demolished for a horrendous, ugly casino. And Dad was conducting the orchestra in the ballroom, and it was really cute because they made him take his glasses off, and I don't see my dad without his glasses on very often, so it always looks weird to me. But the director said, turn around and bow. And my dad turned around and bowed, and then when we went and saw the movie, they'd done this enormous close-up on him, and he was well chuffed. He really was. But I mean, aside from Dad, it's a great film. It was beautifully photographed. The music was absolutely beyond measure, and the story was epically sad.
If you could just explain, I mean, some people overseas who listen to us may not be sure if you just say the word Gallipoli. I mean, everyone knows about it, but give us an idea of what was taking part in this film.
Well, that was the landing on Gallipoli, and then all the war that happened, you know, with the Turkish and so forth in that area.
Mm.
And they were stuck there, basically. They got stuck. They couldn't get out. It was poorly managed landing, and they was well stuck. And then it was about running messages to and fro by guys jumping out of trenches and running, hoping they wouldn't get shot. And it was a frightening time for everybody, but it's a very important date, especially on Anzac Day for us,
yes,
because people pilgrimage to Gallipoli, and it was 100 years last year.
Gosh, that's right. Adam, your thoughts on that?
Look, I have not seen Gallipoli.
Oh, my gosh, you are going to be so busy. You've got to see it now. And, my dad.
Despite the fact that your dad is in it, I'm not going to see it. I can't watch movies about war.
Right.
They horrify me, and I just struggle with them. So I tend to steer clear of those. But, Rach, I have a question for you. You said your dad was conducting the orchestra in it. Was he a conductor?
He is a conductor still. And he's also a violinist. And a couple of years ago, and he teaches. And he, a couple of years ago, received the Order of Australia Medal.
Wow! That's amazing.
For his services to music and to education. So my dad's actually pretty famous in amongst the string circles. So yeah, he's a very accomplished man and very, 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 very fine violinist, beautiful violinist.
Excellent. Well, look, you may have convinced me to actually watch a war movie. How about that?
You can watch it, and when after you've seen Dad, you can turn it off.
Yes.
You know, it's interesting you say that, Adam. I've seen Gallipoli, but I generally don't watch war movies for different reasons than you. I'm not interested in action movies of any sort. After the Second World War, there was a plethora of war movies. Back in the late 40s and the 50s, there was just these endless war movies produced. And I just have no interest in them whatsoever. Just like I don't watch action movies. I'm into drama and good comedy, you know?
Me too.
Yeah. And, of course, you know, Gallipoli is partly responsible for Mel Gibson bursting onto the international scene and becoming a major Hollywood player.
Mm-hmm.
And, it, of course, it had the also starred the gorgeous Mark Lee.
Yeah, he was lovely.
Mm.
He was lovely. And, I mean, there were so many great Australian actors in that. I mean, I think Paul Hogan got a Guernsey in that movie.
Oh, did he?
Didn't he? Robbie's saying no, he didn't. Maybe that was something else I was thinking of. I mean, a lot of Australian music movie stars have gone on to bigger things, and they started in productions such as that. But the music, a lot of the music that was played live, was they sourced all the musicians from the South Australian music branch, from the education department, because that's where all the good musos were working, and that's how Dad got involved.
Right. Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay. If you've just joined us, this is Henry from Bondi Tunes International. and I'm talking with Rachel Brunson and Adam Devlin about our top five favourite films. That's really hard to say. We're up to number two, and my pick is The Exorcist from 1972. Now, I've always been a fan of, as I said, I'm into drama, I'm into comedy, but I'm really into horror. The sad thing these days is that you can't find good horror movies. This has got to be the ultimate horror movie, The Exorcist from 1972. Ellen Burstyn was in it, Max von Sydow, Lee J. Cobb, veteran actor, and of course, Linda Blair. Now, here's an interesting thing about Linda Blair. She was nominated for an Academy Award for this, but then she wasn't. Now, I don't know the details about this. I think the reason that this was all reversed is because she doesn't play all the scenes in the film.
Mm.
And how could she with a revolving head?
Well, if she was any good as an actress.
Yeah, her head would have revolved. And she would be able to come up with that green bile on.
Oh, dear. What did you guys think of The Exorcist?
I love The Exorcist.
Oh, really?
Horror is not a genre that I
embrace.
I don't love it, but if it's a good horror film, then I will love it. And that is, quite simply and easily, the best horror film I've ever seen. I attend on a very regular basis a cinema group screening down here called Cinemaniacs, and most of the members of that, they are obsessed with this film, The Exorcist, and it just is. It is flawless. It is brilliant. Mm. What I find amazing about it is when it was released in 72, the Catholic Church was out protesting against this movie. And I've always found that puzzling because it's actually pro-Christianity.
That's a very interesting angle.
Most like interesting. They, you know, it's about an exorcism that works.
Yes. Very good point. I just want to mention.
I'm always puzzled as to why the Catholic Church was protesting this movie. Well, they should have been out there saying, go see this.
And they believe in exorcism anyway. One thing I noted about this, something I was told, is that, you know, the room, the bedroom, the little girl's bedroom, you know the way they're all breathing steam out of their mouths because it's so cold?
Yes.
They actually brought the room down to the temperature so that this would happen. So all these actors are freezing to death, excuse the pun, in a movie called The Exorcist.
Yeah.
But it was really tough for the actors, especially Max, can never get his name, Max von Sydow, who wasn't that old at the time, but he wasn't that young either. And he said in an interview, he said, I nearly killed me, because they'd be there for like 12 hours doing a couple of scenes, you know. Rach, did you like The Exorcist? Did you see The Exorcist?
Yeah, I did. I didn't like it. I saw it when I was a kid. It came out when I was a kid.
Oh my god!
And it just scared the death out. It really did. It scared me to death. I didn't enjoy anything about it. I think I maybe got halfway through it and had to turn it off. I think I was maybe 11 or 12 when that movie came out, and I was beyond horrified. And I was just so terrified and frightened that I was then going to go to bed that night and be possessed by the devil. And I think I was way too young to see it, and I have never been able to watch it since.
When I was, a couple of years later, they were re-showing this in the cinemas in Dublin, where I lived, and I was about 14, and you had to be 18 to get in, but somehow myself and a mate got in there at the age of 14 and watched this horror movie, and I've been addicted to it ever since, because I'm a sick man. Okay, and now we're up to the big number one, Rach.
Did we do number two?
Yeah,
that was number two.
Yeah,
we didn't do my number two,
didn't we?
What was your number two?
Xanadu.
Sorry, Adam. I can't believe Xanadu wasn't in there in the first place from you. So, of course. Okay, back to Adam, Xanadu, Olivia Newton-John, 1982.
1980,
okay.
Open your eyes and hear the magic.
Xanadu!
Universal Pictures announces the most dazzling romantic musical fantasy in years. Xanadu. Starring Olivia Newton-John, Michael Beck, and Gene Kelly.
Her first foray into film following the global success of Grease, starring, of course, the amazing and the iconic, legendary Gene Kelly.
Yes. I think one of his last movies.
It was his last film.
Right.
His last acting film. He was in a documentary after that, talking about the golden years of Hollywood. But his last acting role was Xanadu.
Mm.
Maligned by many.
Oh, really?
I loved it.
I love it. To death.
It's worth pointing out that Adam is actually writing a book about this. About Xanadu.
Yes, I'm about halfway through writing the book for it. Mm-hmm. On it at the moment. Now, it's not without its flaws. It's not a perfect film in any way, shape, or form. But for me, it just has such a good heart, and the storyline. The story is, you know. Dreams do and can come true.
Mm.
And I think that's an amazing storyline, an amazing theme to be around today even. But, you know, if we didn't have Xanadu, we wouldn't have the Razzie Awards.
What are the Razzie
Awards? Yeah, that's true.
What are they?
The Razzies are the anti-Academy Awards, so they happen just before the Academy Awards, and it's an awards ceremony for the worst films of the year.
Oh, I love that.
And in 1980, we saw two films come out. Coincidentally, both of them on a level related to Olivia Newton-John, who, of course, is the female lead of Xanadu. And I might also just say, as far as I'm aware, she was the first Australian, certainly the first Australian female, to have her name above the title of a major Hollywood film.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Can't think of one before her.
As late as 1980?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There were, people like Errol Flynn and people before then in the 70s, there was Rod Taylor and so forth, had big Hollywood careers. But I can't think of another Australian female actor who had star billing in a major Hollywood film before her. I may be wrong, but I'm not aware of if there is.
She paved the way for so many Australian actors, for sure.
Absolutely. And, let's not, people, dismiss her as an actress, but, she has box office receipts approaching about $750 million at the moment to her name. So, she's not to be sniffed at.
And I hope, Adam, that Nicole Kidman appreciates this.
The Razzies came about, I just want to get this out, Henry, sorry.
No worries.
The Razzies came about because in 1980 there were two films came out. One was Xanadu, starring Olivia Newton-John, and the other one was Can't Stop the Music, starring the Village People.
Oh.
And Olivia was offered the lead role of Can't Stop the Music, and she turned that down to do Xanadu.
Good choice.
Yeah, and of course, when these two movies came out, the two men behind the Razzie Awards just looked at them and went, these are the worst things we've ever seen. They deserve awards for how bad they are. And so the Razzies were formed. But I disagree with them because I actually think it's an amazing film.
I was going to say, you would have to disagree with them if Xanadu is part of it.
Absolutely. Xanadu is actually, it's my second favourite film of all time. Mm. Simply because of the message it gives. And the innocence in it's so lovely and so heartfelt and just joyous that if you're ever feeling a little bit down or bleak or whatever, watch Xanadu, you'll be on the top of the moon.
Have you watched it,
Rach? One of the best. Have I watched it? Yep. Oh my gosh, I can't tell you how many times.
Oh, okay.
Because she was my hero when I was little. The first time I saw her was in Grease, and I was about 7 or 8. And then Xanadu came out, and I was, because I immediately was completely besotted with her. And then when Xanadu came out, I was all over that. And now I've got, it's in my DVD collection. I love that movie. I love her. That's why I love that movie. Yeah. But I also love that movie because it had one of the best scores and soundtracks ever. Oh,
and the mix of 1940s big band jazz and 80s disco.
Yes.
Merging together. There's a track in it called Dancin', which goes for about 8 minutes. And it's the merge of 40s jazz and 80s disco. And they merge it together into this most amazing production scene. That scene alone is worth the $20 million budget that Xanadu got.
That's fantastic. Didn't ELO get involved?
Yes, they did. Very
absolutely.
Much.
Absolutely. And the soundtrack is one of the most successful soundtracks of all time.
Mm.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Gosh. Okay.
I had the vinyl. I had the vinyl growing up.
Did you have the tape?
Yep.
No, I had the vinyl. I went hard and heavy.
Good for you.
I was a little, I don't want to shock you with this, but I was a little bit Olivia Newton-John obsessed at that point.
No shit.
And so, yes, I had the T-shirt, the shorts, the books, the posters, the record, the cassette. You know, if something had Xanadu on it, I had it.
Fair enough. Okay, let's go to number one, the films we think are the best in our lives. Rachel.
My number one is The Breakfast Club.
Andrew Clark! Get up here. Come on, front and center. Let's go.
Hey, how come Andrew gets to get up?
That's right.
If he gets up, we'll all get up. It'll be anarchy!
Okay, watch the magazines.
It's out of my hands. That's very clever, sir. But what if there's a fire? I think violating fire codes and endangering the lives of children would be unwise at this juncture in your career, sir.
All right, what are you doing with this? What are you doing with it? Get out of here, for God's sake. What's the matter with you? Come on!
Well, you know the school comes equipped with fire exits at either end of the library. Show Dick some respect.
Let's go. Go, get back in your seat.
And the reason why it is because when I was that happened when I was about 15.
Yeah.
And I just fell madly in love with the notion that these people were being dismissed by people older than them because they were children. And the way that they all came together and got over themselves in terms of their peer group, which was a big deal when we were at school. It was a very big deal.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
It spoke to me on so many levels, and it was the reason why I wrote my first film. The minute I saw it, at the very, very last second of that film, I grabbed a ream of reflex paper and started writing this movie, and which we made, filmed, edited, finished. And it was in a crucial part of my growing up, and it was a very important film in my life. Plus, it's really good, and another great soundtrack.
Mm. And it is,
yes.
Robert Hughes, is that right? What's his name?
No, John Hughes.
John Hughes, excuse me. Robert Hughes, oh dear.
Who, of course, went on and did 16 Candles.
Yeah, and others.
16 Candles was first.
And Pretty in Pink.
And then he did, yeah, then he did Breakfast Club, and then he did Pretty in Pink, and then he did Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Ah.
And then he did, in between some of that, he did Weird Science. And then he, a little bit later, he sadly passed away, which That's was right. very early and very sad.
Eat my shorts.
You just bought yourself another Saturday, mister.
Crushed.
You just bought one more right there.
Well, I'm free the Saturday after that. Beyond that, I'm going to have to check my calendar.
Good, because it's going to be filled. We'll keep going. You want another one? Say the word. Just say the word. Instead of going to prison, you'll come here. Are you through?
No.
I'm doing society a favor.
So?
That's another one right now. I've got you for the rest of your natural born life if you don't watch your step. You want another one?
Yes.
You got it. You got another one right there. That's another one, pal.
Cut it out.
You through?
Not even close, bud.
Good. You got one more right there.
You really think I give a shit?
Another. You through?
How many is that?
That's seven, including the one when we first came in and you asked Mr. Vernon here whether Barry Manilow knew that he raided his closet.
Now it's eight. You stay out of it.
Excuse me, sir, it's seven.
Shut up, Pee-wee.
When I watched The Breakfast Club for the first time, and I've probably seen it, I would say, a good 10 or 12 times.
Yeah, me too.
But for me, that is Ally Sheedy's film.
Of course, it is. It's totally
wasn't
her
she
film.
Great?
She stole it. She literally stole it out from under them.
What was the sandwich that she had? Was it crisps or
popcorn? Caramel popcorn with some pickles.
I love that film. You know, this director really tapped into the minds of teenagers in the 80s, mm-hmm. which is yes. not an easy thing to do.
No.
It's
not. And I think it came from his own personal experience of being, you know, excluded or nerded or shamed or bullied. And probably from the subtext of a lot of these movies, it's not. You don't have a particularly great relationship with your parents, but he was full of angst himself, and
really?
That's translated so well. Yeah, he was translated so well to the stories that he was writing and the movies that he was making and the way he wrote his characters, and he had particular you know quirky insight into that world of the teenage mind, but he had every social group covered every time. And he nailed it every time. And it was exactly how it was.
It's very interesting watching teen movies now. They're so different.
They're dark. And they're
much darker, yeah. I mean, these, of course, you had the rich, in the Breakfast Club, you had the rich girl, the jock dude, the bad guy.
The nerd.
The weirdo.
And the weirdo. And, of course, at the beginning of that film and at the end of that film, there's a narration because he writes a letter. Is that right?
Yeah. And it was just a microcosm of exactly what went on in every single school in America, but also loosely translated every single school around the world, I would imagine. I had all those characters in my school, but it was a beautiful look at it. Like he'd put everything in a tiny Petri dish and we'd got the microscope on it. And seeing exactly what goes through the heads of these particular people based on their relationship with their parents, what social group they fit into in school, their economic situation, all of that stuff. It was very smart and it was very well done.
And it was done very quickly.
Yeah.
It was a brilliant film. I loved it. Didn't
he do it in 48 hours or something?
Yeah, something really whack. They worked really hard. They worked all through the night, but they were wonderfully connected after that, and a lot of those actors went on to act together later, not in his films, but there was a film called another film I loved was Sonoma's Fire, Ally Sheedy, Judd Nelson, and Emilio Estevez were in that film as well. So they became the Brat Pack.
That's right, and if you look back in the 1950s. You know, with old blue eyes and his gang, Dean Martin, Sammy Davis
Jr.,
they were the Rat Pack. So I believe that the actors in this movie hated being called the Brat Pack.
Yeah, I don't think they cared for it. I think Emilio Estevez and Rob Lowe liked it the least. And Charlie Sheen was a fringe dweller of the Brat Pack, when he started to get in trouble, it was all about the Brat Pack, and they were saying, no, we're not the Brat Pack. I don't want anything to do with it.
Yeah.
But yeah, there was quite a large group of them, Rob Lowe, Demi Moore, you know, people like that.
And it made their careers. Okay, how about Adam's number one?
My number one is quite simply and uncontroversially and without any hesitation or doubt the best film ever made. Why are you laughing?
No, I'm not. I'm not laughing. Go on.
Gone with the Wind.
Yes.
1939, based on Margaret Mitchell's amazing novel about the end of the Southern plantation community. Yeah.
The Civil War and all that sort of stuff.
The Civil War drama. Mm. I've never seen a film that's been better made. I've never seen a film that's been better acted. I've never seen a film that's been better written than this film.
Red, you go. Where shall I go? What shall I do?
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
I can't let him go. I can't. There must be some way to bring him back. Oh, I can't think about this now. I'll go crazy if I do. I'll think about it tomorrow.
The character of Scarlett O'Hara is, as far as I'm concerned, head and shoulders above any other female character in cinema.
Wasn't it ahead of its time, though, Adam? It was.
Oh, God, yes.
Because it was made in the 30s, and they gave the lead role, the heroine role, the tough saviour of everybody, to a woman.
Mm. Very interesting.
It was incredibly amazing.
Oh,
but that era.
And a woman who at the end of it is abandoned by her man.
Yeah.
And still goes well,
yeah. So tomorrow is another day.
Exactly. As God is my witness, I shall never be hungry again.
Also, I don't know nothing about birthing no babies.
Yeah. I love Prissy. But, you know, Hetty McDonald, I think her name was, as playing Mammy, was the first Indigenous American to earn an Academy Award.
Yes.
And be allowed to go.
And be allowed, yes. Good point. And she was crying up there, thanking. It was like she couldn't believe that she was allowed to do it, you know?
Yeah. It was a wonderful Just moment. A groundbreaking film on so many levels. I just, as an aside, I'll also say that the novel Gone with the Wind is also the best book I've ever read.
Oh. Yeah, me too.
Just, you know, it's about, seems like about 4,827 pages long.
Just like the movie is 4 hours long.
Yeah, but I read it over a weekend. It's addictive. This movie, look, if there's anyone out there who hasn't seen Gone with the Wind,
that's your homework.
I know it's a big call. It does go for about 4 hours.
you know, I love the way they've Adam, I love the way they've got intermission. They've just got big words, intermission. So everyone goes out. I was going to say everyone goes out for a smoke, but you could all smoke in the cinemas in those days.
Back then you could, yes.
You had to go pee.
That's right, yeah. And maybe have a drink or something.
Yeah.
It's one of the most successful films of all time as well. It won, I think, 9 Academy Awards. To date, it's taken somewhere around $400 million at the box office. That is not adjusted for inflation.
Really?
Wow.
Okay, we're coming to the end of this. And my number one favorite movie... Can anyone guess? Probably
Debbie
not.
Does Dallas.
Oh, that was back in...
Oh,
Adam.
Controversial.
Well, it was my favourite movie back in 1980. Okay, my
favourite... I was watching Senator.
That's right. Oh, how different paths we were brought up in. My favourite movie is Arthur.
Mr. Park! Good to see you.
Oh, if only someone I knew felt that way. Are you a hooker? Jesus, I forgot. I just thought I was doing great with you.
Gloria, I would like you to meet Hobson, my best friend in the world.
I relish the compliment. It's thrilling to meet you, Gloria.
Hi.
Yes. You obviously have a wonderful economy with words, Gloria. I look forward to your next syllable with great eagerness.
I'm going to take a bath.
I'll alert the media.
Do you want to run my bath for me?
It's what I live for. Perhaps you'd like me to come in there and wash your dick for you, you little shit. Here, read this magazine. There are many pictures.
Why can't nobody ever smile here? Why doesn't anybody ever smile here?
They smile at lunchtime.
Oh, yeah.
Ah, yes.
I'll alert the media.
That's right. Do you want me to come in and wash your dick for you?
You little shit. That's a great movie. It's another movie I grew up on, and it was, and Sir John Gielgud was just sublime, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And Dudley Moore was so good. And he said, don't you wish you were me? I know I do.
Yeah. Just so brilliant. Good. And the other thing, and we've talked about this before, Rach, you know, Dudley Moore was a teetotaler. He didn't drink. And Liza Minnelli, when being interviewed, and of course she was in the movie as well, she said that when he got pretended to be drunk, because he didn't drink alcohol, and the whole movie's about him being drunk, she said he lunged forward instead of backwards, like most drunks do. And she said... Mm-hmm. Or most drunks in movies do. And she said, he's absolutely right, that actually when you get drunk, you do lunge forwards. Mm-hmm. So that was really interesting. Mm. John Gielgud, really, we've talked about this before, Rachel. They've tried for a lot of actors for this part, but you can't imagine it without John Gielgud.
You can't. He was just sublime. He was perfect. He was perfect as Hobson. He really was. And they did not make one misstep casting that film, even right down to his fiancée, Susan. She was just beautifully played. And I can't remember her name, the actress, but she was gorgeously played. But even the driver, Biederman, he was just genius. And her dad was just fantastic. Yes. And of course, his great-grandma, she was just beyond.
Oh, peanuts!
She was so... peanuts! Peanuts! She was so wicked. She was so wickedly funny, and the whole film was just a joy. And it was actually, this is a funny story, and I'll tell it very quickly.
No, take your time.
When I did The Sound of Music back in '83, I was permitted to make one large purchase with my money, and I bought a VCR because we didn't have one, and it was a JVC pop-up VCR, top-loading VCR.
Oh, yes.
With the remote. We had a remote, but it was on a cord.
On a cord,
and,
yep.
And I would sit there when my favourite movies came on TV, and two that I can tell you that I taped were Arthur and Blazing Saddles, and I would sit there and pause when the ads were on, and then they were the two movies, and my mother, to this day, still has them in her shelf, those two movies.
Excellent stuff.
So great. Love.
Okay, well, we've come to the end of
this. It's one of my favourite comedies of all time. I think it's brilliant.
So you're up
good
there.
Good choice.
Yep, okay.
Well, and look, to this day, I have not watched the remake, and I will not watch it.
Is that right? I did watch the remake, and I was appalled because they really shouldn't have tried that.
No, I shouldn't have done
what
it.
What were your thoughts on the sequel, Arthur 2, On the Rocks?
Oh, it was not great. But I love those characters so much, I wanted to watch, and... When I did, I thought, this is just, they're trying too hard. It was like Miss Congeniality too. She won a Razzie for that, by the way, Sandra Bullock.
Yeah.
But it was like doing that. It was a story that was done, and they tried to breathe life into it because purely for money, I think.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
It was a disappointment.
I think Arthur is Liza Minnelli's second best performance in her career. Obviously, her best is Cabaret. But, But Arthur is brilliant. Sensational.
So good.
Okay, we must end this. Look, thank you so much, Rachel Brunston and Adam Devlin, for joining me here on Bondi Tunes International once again for this special of our top five favourite films. Thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure.
This is Bondi Tunes International. This is Real Radio.
Henry O'Donovan.